Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno was elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Hey, what's going on, Rugby Rant fans? It's the Hammer, and I am joined by, of course, two special dudes, but one that has been on the show before. A lot of you guys know him. I know a lot of you guys love him. He always brings it to the house. It is my man, Rick the Jackal King Collins, come to us from Dallas. What's up there, Richard?
Man, doing great. Excited to be here tonight.
Well, I appreciate that. I know you always, like I said, you always bring it. You always bring something special.
I've got all the notes.
I know he shared them with us before, and I know where he's coming from. I love it. But that's what I love about bringing Rick on the show. He's always prepared, always knows what he's talking about, always likes to speak from a position of authority. We're going to change it up today, folks. Just a little bit of a tweak. Normally we do around the pitch and talk about some things going on in and around North American rugby and beyond. But I've got a very special guest that I wanted to bring on today because we just had the 2024 version of the MLR draft, and a guy that's near and dear to my heart. Yes, I'm biased. That's because he hails from Lindenwood University. Very he is nice. From Lionland, of course. But, you know, I've gotten to know Calvin over the last, you know, year or two. And have really, what a special and just a nice young man. His parents raised him right. Mrs. Hammer, Calvin, commented just how nice of a kid you are when we had a chance to talk to you up there in Madison a couple weeks ago. But folks, we have got, Rick and I have the pleasure of talking to the number three overall draft pick in the 2024 MLR draft, going to the Miami Sharks. It's Calvin Irig. Calvin, welcome to the show, kid.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure always. But for those that don't know, just a little bit of background on Calvin. He hails from Oakland, California. He, of course, like I said, played at Lindenwood University. St. Louis Bombers Sevens this summer. Played a little bit at Lindenwood Belleville before they shut they shut down as an institution, undergrad institution that was. He's traveled all over, and we'll get into that. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds because I'd like him to share a little bit about his story and where he comes from. But he has a really interesting background, you know, prior to coming to Lindenwood. We're just going to throw some questions at him because we're really excited to talk to a guy of his caliber and somebody that really showed out during MLR Rising. Hey, Rick, I'm going to give you the honors, mate. Let's talk about draft day. Throw a question there at Calvin.
Yeah, Calvin. You know, I think the general MLR public knows that this draft happens a week in advance. I'm sure it's very exciting to watch it unravel on TV as well. But what was the experience like, especially this season? Because you had MLR Rising versus the last few drafts where we had the Utah Mats. What was the name?
Collegiate Shield.
Thank you, the Collegiate Shield. And MLR Rising was heavily structured around getting potential draft picks live action, as well as getting, you know, stats and data about the players' fitness and skill set and that sort of thing. What was that like, knowing that that was going to be a preponent of, you know, getting potentially drafted in this MLR draft?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was exciting. I was very confident going into it. I know what I bring to the table. And that's just kind of what I backed the whole week. I think that, you know, the coaches kept emphasizing that, you know, the way that you conduct yourself throughout the week, you know, speak, take care of your recovery, train, show up to training. You know, that'll have a big impact on how they see you as a player. And if they think that you'll add value to their program, and that could definitely help you get drafted in the end. And so, I mean, you know, that was like something that, you know, you just wanted to keep in the back of your mind. It wasn't only about how you played, because, you know, everybody knows that there's really good players out there, but if they don't conduct themselves the right way, then, you know, that can really hurt them. So.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the actual game, right? As you're building up, obviously, as you said, you recognize that there are a lot of quality players that are out there. You know you're going to be playing with a quality cast around you. You have the honor of being selected captain of the black team.
Yeah.
Did you have to make a conscientious effort to kind of really say to yourself, look, this isn't about me, it's about we. We want to do well. We want to perform well. I know Tui focused on it. It was kind of something that was discussed in the docuseries. So, you know, going back to that question, did you really have to focus on, we want to win the game, we want to play well together, or did it just come naturally for you?
I think for me, that's something that comes more naturally to me, especially at Lindenwood. Like, there's not a very like selfish mentality. I played 2 years ago, I came off the bench for Lindenwood, and that's where I got most of my minutes. And, you know, coming off the bench, you're not going to do something where it's very self-centered. You have to come on and make an impact, make, you know, big tackles and do stuff that's going to propel the team forward in a way if you're down, or just, you know, keep the momentum up if you're winning. And for me, I mean, one message that I gave to the team, because, I mean, that, you know, the black team was so stacked with unbelievable players. I mean, like Pono from St. Mary's, Juma from, you know, Wheeling. The back row was just and all the whole team, Peyton Wall. I mean, you know, you can, you know, list all these guys. But I knew that, you know, if everybody just tries to make an individual effort and that's all they try to show, then we're going to lose the game. Because it's, at the end of the day, it's a 15-man game and you need everybody to win. And so I said to the team that, you know, the thing that'll win us the game tomorrow is playing cohesively. And obviously we're all here to showcase our individual skill and brilliance. But the one thing that will allow us to do that is by playing together as a team and playing cohesively. And I think, like, at the end of the day, that's what GMs and coaches want to see, you know, is a guy that can come into their program and can gel well with other players and be a selfless player.
Nice. I appreciate that. Go ahead, Rick.
You're going to be joining a pretty good back row there in Miami. Caceres, who just got drafted, who looked like an experienced veteran last season, and Ardal, who obviously phenomenal player. How do you see yourself fitting in there? And then kind of what are your expectations, and maybe what were the expectations that their coaching staff had for you?
So to answer your question about my expectations, I mean, the way I see myself fit in there is just like to work hard. I think that's the biggest thing for me, is just to work really hard. I spoke with Coach Jose, and manager Lucas about a week ago. And essentially what Coach Jose told me is that, you know, he's like, you know, we believe in you and we think that we can develop you into a better player. He was like, it's just about how you show up. And obviously with, they mentioned Ricky Rose and how Ricky Rose had a great season, and how he just was, you know, all ears at training, worked really hard and, you know, saw himself at the end of the season, have a really great, season. I think for me, the way I see myself going over to Miami is just not having any expectations to play right away, but more so just to train and really pick the brains of the guys that are playing ahead of me. And that's ultimately what I'm most excited for, is just to learn. I mean, you know, the coaching there is unbelievable, and Coach Jose, who has an unbelievable resume. And then, like you mentioned before, the back row there are just a lot of really good guys that have, you know, a lot of minutes under their belt. And so I'm just really, really keen on picking their brains and learning from them.
Yeah, I forgot to mention Bonasso as well. To build on that just real quick. When Miami calls you, and I'm sure several other teams probably called you as well, did you kind of have an idea of where you might be going in the draft? What, you know, city? Did you think, oh, please let Chicago draft me so I don't have to, you know, fly across country, make it that move? Or was it kind of like, you know, I'm excited for a new adventure, and I will go wherever I get drafted and just try and make an impact there and, you know, experience a new place?
Yeah. First and foremost for me, it was about going to a team that is like willing to like develop me and have interest in me as well. Like, I think that, you know, you can go to the number one best team in the country, but, you know, if they don't necessarily pay much attention to you, then it's hard as well to be in an environment like that. So for me, it wasn't really about going to the best team or whatever. It was more so about just going to a team that would take interest in me. But to answer your question, I didn't really have an idea when I would go and where I would go. I was speaking to a few teams, you know, that said they were interested. And it's funny because a bunch of my Linwood teammates were like, you know where you're going and you know what pick and to what team you're going to. And I was like, fellas, I'm in the same boat as you. I know kind of, you know, roughly, you know, based on the teams I've been talking to, but I don't know anything either. And so that's also what made the draft a lot more interesting for me, was just, you know, where am I going to end up?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that draft day. You know, you mentioned the boys at Linwood were like, hey, you know where you're going, what pick you are, but you truly didn't. This year, you guys as draftees had no idea.
Yeah.
What was laying in front of you on that Wednesday night? So talk me through that night, you know, at the buildup. Who were you with? Who was hanging out? What was the vibe like? And when your name was called, when you saw your image on the screen as the number three pick for the Miami Sharks, what went through your mind?
Can I swear?
Yes, this is a podcast. You can swear.
In my mind, I was like, holy shit. But,
Scott scores far worse than that, so go ahead.
No, like I said, I just thought, holy shit, I couldn't believe it. You know, to go in the first round alone would have been a privilege, but to go number three overall was something I'd never imagined, and like it's truly like an honor and very humbling. And it also just kind of backed my confidence more that Miami believes in me. To pick me in that round, you know, the third pick. So, like I said, very humbling. I know I have my work cut out for me, but that day was It's funny. I was working that day. I work Monday, Wednesday, Friday right now for a general contractor, and Coach Jose had messaged me on WhatsApp like a week before draft day, and I didn't see his message because I don't use WhatsApp very frequently. And whenever a message pops up, I just kind of ignore it because I'm in a bunch of group chats from home, you know, rugby group chats or whatever. Yeah. And I just kind of like I didn't see it. And then he calls me a day before the draft, and he's like, "Hey, Calvin, this is Coach Jose with Miami." He's like, you know, and so then I was like, "Hey, how's it going?" He's like, "I sent you a message a week ago, and you didn't reply." I was like, "Oh, crap, I'm sorry. I did not see your message," whatever. And then we started talking, but the draft day was unreal. I mean, I have some great friends and my girlfriend that try to set up, you know, a very wholesome viewing setup. So it was good. You know, I had all my friends there, my very close friends. My girlfriend was sitting next to me. And then there was a couple of new guys that just came to Lynnwood that were in the room too. And yeah, it was funny because everybody was just kind of talking, and then the draft started, and then, you know, Eric Storti goes one, Trainer goes two, and then, you know, everyone was still kind of talking. And then they said, you know, Miami picks, and, you know, Duncan, the our Lynnwood captain, goes, "Oh," and he, you know, just kind of says something, and then, you know, lo and behold, my face showed up, and I was like, "Holy shit, I can't believe it." So,
yeah. Nice. Yeah. So walk fans through kind of what you're going to be going through from now until, you know, getting into camp. January. And we don't know quite when that's going to be, whether it's January or February, probably a little earlier than last season. You know, walk me through what's happened in your life. Where do you see things going till you hit South Beach?
Yeah. So I think staying in shape and putting on a few LBs is kind of where my head's at right now.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where my head's at right now. So I've been trying to, you know, go to the gym minimum 4 days a week right now, and just eat as much as I can. And then I'll be training and playing with the St. Louis Bombers throughout the fall. Yep, there it is. Just to you know, just to stay in shape and keep some ball in hand. And by the way, there's a ton of really, really, really good players that are playing for the Bombers as well, like Tinashe Muchena, Kean Darling, Nick Feeks, Reese.
Oh, Kean's up there too, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a cast of characters. I'm loving it.
Marcus Spangenberg, ton of really good players. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of where you want to be at when you're looking to up your game before you go to the next level.
100%. And on that note, you mentioned Nick Feeks, of course, a guy who spent time in New Orleans. A guy that brought my interest to New Orleans because he was an LU boy that was really super to my son Preston, of course, and still is, you know, as a teammate with the Bombers. Mm-hmm. And then he went to New York, and now he's playing with the Bombers now in the second season, 15th season. Right. Have you talked to Feeksy at all about what life is like and how to prepare, and gotten any sage words of advice from that old man, Nick Feeks?
Yeah, actually, Feeks was like one of the first people I called after the draft and just kind of asked him, you know, what his experience was like, just speaking with the managers and the coaches, and then what his season looked like, his first season, and kind of like the biggest changes for him. By the sounds of it, Feeks had a blast his first season.
It is New Orleans, man.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it offered a ton of insight, just, you know, how I should handle myself, you know, the different things I should look out for, and kind of how to look after yourself a little bit. Cause now, you know, it's all a business, you know what I mean? And so he was just kind of telling me about, you know, how to look after yourself and also how to, yeah, just conduct yourself and be a good person overall.
Yeah. I'll bet it's harder when, you know, you don't have a PR person for every five players on a team, right? Like some of the other professional leagues, you really got to watch yourself more than I would say than, you know, some of the top professional league sports and in the US. Yeah. So that makes it even extra difficult as you don't have as many helping hands.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. And I was just more so kind of wondering, you know, what his transition was like. Like I said, what the biggest changes were from the collegiate level to the professional level. And then, of course, just how to conduct yourself and kind of how he went about it. So, yeah.
Now, do you have a plan when you're going to head down to Miami yet?
Yeah, we'll meet there January 6th.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah. Are you taking your gal with you?
She plays volleyball here at Lindenwood.
Okay.
But and she's doing her master's.
What's with you rugby boys and the volleyball players? It's like you guys
I've dated two of them.
Yeah, you guys have some kind of thing going on here. There's like, I know P dates one and Marnus dates one and Reese, yeah. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't
volleyball
know.
Volleyball girls like, are cool, man. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, no, they are. But I guess we're all friends, and so we're all just hanging. We're naturally just hanging around them. What was I saying? Oh yeah, no. So she will be finishing her master's here, but then after that she's looking to go to law school. So you know, we'll kind of see. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure Miami has one. I'm trying to think. There's a really good UCF.
Is it UCF? Mm-hmm. I think was another really good one.
Yeah.
That's in the Gulf of Florida. There's
some good programs down there.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
She doesn't have to follow you, but you know, you can always make suggestions.
I mean, we're both very set on, you know, if there's a big opportunity right now, take it and don't really alter your path or your course for the other person, because we're still so young. You know what I mean? And I know somebody who altered his path for his significant other, and then they ended up breaking up and he lost a huge opportunity. So
yeah.
We're both very understanding of that, which smart. Is not, yeah.
Clearly y'all are both smart.
Yeah.
So I gotta ask, so as we kind of look forward, project forward, one of the things I think we've identified in rugby is that sometimes rugby, because of culture, gets very caught up in the team mentality. And sometimes we're often afraid to step out and let our individual flair shine. And it's kind of one of the downsides of rugby right now in trying to create more buzz and interest. Obviously, Alon Amar has really done an amazing job being able to balance and find that balance and do both. So let's project forward, right? You want to put somebody, you know, a docuseries is coming out, whatever, and they're saying, hey, we want to talk to Calvin. We want to put him out there. We want to put him on a stage. What things in your background would you tap into, or should they tap into, about who you are as a person, where you came from, how you developed into the person you are? Tell us, you know, what's in that background that's going to make you just a unique personality that they can tap into?
I would say for me, it's like the, that's a tough question.
I mean, do you have a hidden talent, you know, like, juggling or, you know, magic tricks?
I don't. I'm very
playing rugby is,
his, yeah. is yeah. the talent.
Yeah. No, that's a really good question. I mean,
but you've traveled a lot in your young life, haven't you?
Yeah, I think that's been extremely eye-opening for me, and it's also allowed me to, you know, understand people from other cultures a lot easier, and you know, just understand them and where they're coming from and relate to them a lot more easily, I think. And it's made me a lot better with people too. I think that's one of my biggest traits right now. It's just I'm a people person. I know how to speak to people, and so. Yeah, I would say that's what, you know, my life of traveling and seeing different cultures and experiencing that has brought to me. So
that's certainly going to benefit you down in Miami with a variety of cultures, a very Argentine background.
Not a melting pot.
Yeah, you got a melting pot.
Argentinians are extremely funny. We have a few of them here at Lindenwood too, and they're just great people, always up for a good time.
Yeah.
Love to crack jokes. Really funny, actually. So
That's cool. And of course you got Alec McDonald on there to keep you grounded, from Lindenwood himself, a Missouri boy. So we like to see that.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever met Alec in person.
Oh no.
No, I don't think so. I've heard a lot about him. But I've never met him in person. But then there's also Setu Vole, who's down there,
yep.
Connor Burns, and then Lautaro Soto-Anse just got drafted by Miami as well, who's a Lindenwood boy.
Yeah, nice, nice.
Yeah.
You got a good crew around there. Alec is a dude. He's every team has a couple of dudes, and he is definitely one of those dudes that you lean on, just a down to earth, salt of the earth type of guy.
Yeah.
You'll like Alec a lot. So, hey, look, we've taken a lot of your time. We appreciate it. We love it. We thank you so much. And, you know, we wish you all the best. Absolutely. As you head into that next chapter of your life. I'm excited for you. And I know we're going to see a little bit for the Bombers this fall. So we'll catch up and have a few laughs. And,
yes, sir.
You know,
look. As long as Dallas beats Miami, I'm good. So.
I don't know if that'll happen.
That's his no comment question.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Pass. All right. Well, hey, Calvin, thanks a lot for your time. Again, we wish you well, mate. All the best. Can't wait to catch up with you in person here in a couple of weeks. And then we'll be down there in St. Louis here in October. Looking forward to that too. But thank you so much for joining me.
Cheers. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you guys' time.
No worries, mate. No worries. All
right. Thanks. Have a good evening, guys.
You too. You too. Thank you. Be good.
Right. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. All right, guys. Once again, Calvin Ehrig from Lindenwood University, number 3 pick overall in the 2024 MLR draft, going to the Miami Sharks. And I think he is going to fit in quite well down there in Miami. What do you think, Rick?
I think he's going to be great down there. You know, it's going to be really hard to start in that back row, especially as a rookie, but he's going to get minutes. Yeah. The quality is there, quality of character, the quality of player. He's going to get minutes there. I could see him being kind of like Fulau was with Dallas this year, which was just, he was the back row off the bench every single match. And he racked up those 87 tackles as like the 4th leading tackler, completely coming off the bench.
Yeah. And that's okay. You know, that's okay. Cause you, like he said, he's performed in that role with Lindenwood, and, you know, so he understands how important it is, how critical it is. And it doesn't diminish what you are as a player. If anything, it accentuates what you are as a player. Cause you have to actually be ready from the get go to jump on there. And as he said, make an impact. So I agree with you. I really think it's going to be a good fit for him, and I can't wait to see how he shines in 2025.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, folks. So again, something new and different on the Rugby Rant to start us off, but we're still cooking with gas. I'm going to stay away from that other phrase that the big guy uses. We're cooking with gas here. We're going to continue with the Rugby Rant. We're going to come back to you. Our topic this week in the Rugby Rant, Rick and I are going to be talking about USA versus Japan in that PNC match this last weekend. We're going to talk all about that, preview a little bit about Fiji on the back end, perhaps make a prediction, if you will, but really, again, talk USA rugby. So we'll be back in just a moment with the Rugby Rant, talking USA versus Japan. All right, we're back with the rant portion of the episode. Again, like I said, we're going to be talking USA versus Japan in that PNC matchup. And we know score is 41-24. I actually picked the spread at 17, so I hit the mark. I was pretty impressed with myself. I very rarely do that. I think a lot of people expected to be the margin to be a little bit wider. Wasn't the line like 24, Rick?
Yes, it was 20. I think it was like 22.5 or something like that was the final line.
Yeah.
After the lineouts came out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the number 19 ranked team against the number 14 ranked team in Japan in World Rugby Rankings, playing in Kamagaya Rugby Stadium.
I'm not going to try on the Japanese names. I'm sorry.
I had to go slow. I didn't want to say something else. But, you know, again, going back to Japan in anticipation of this match, Japan had beaten Canada 55-28. So I think we felt like this is one of those games that could get out of hand if the United States didn't stay on top of things. And Rick, we, at least initially with a 10-point lead early on, I think within the first 4 or 5 minutes, it looked like it might go that way.
Yeah. So one of the things that, Coach came out, Coach Lawrence came out and said was we need to, come out in the first 20 minutes and play our best rugby and then finish in the last 20 minutes. And I think those were the failure areas. I think that's where Japan played their best. And unfortunately, that first 20 minutes was brutal. I think that actually there was the second or third, it might've been the second try. Was at like the 26 minute mark, but despite that first 20 minutes, they kept territory. They kept pressure and that didn't really subside too much throughout the game. I think we had some good periods, but that first 20 minutes was brutal. Just from the kickoff, you got a knock on a very poorly played kickoff. And that continued throughout the match. The kickoffs were horrific.
Yeah. You talk about pressure. One of the areas that I really think that there was a ton of pressure was the pace of play. Right. And I think that's where, Scott Lawrence has always talked about wanting to play a very fast paced, exciting brand of rugby. And I don't know that I've seen that out of his teams yet. And guys, let me put that in context, because that is by no means a knock on a Scott Lawrence or his team. We really haven't seen his team get a lot of time in camp where they have a 6-week run up where he can really do the proper preparation for getting guys match fit as he wants to play.
Can we even say that we've seen a Scott Lawrence roster yet? Because I hesitate to say this is still a half leftovers roster from Gold that he's just trying to play out as he's getting some younger guys blooded and experienced.
Well, and I want to be careful. I agree with that statement. I want to be careful, at least in my eyes. I think that kind of old guard that we talk about, they have a purpose for Scott Lawrence team. They're there because they're leaders. They may not be the most, and I want to be careful here. Some of the guys may not be the most athletic American qualified players at their position, but I think the qualities that he's looking for is really about leadership and how to set a culture and a standard so that as those young guys come in, those guys that he does see as the future for 2027, they understand what kind of culture they're coming into. And they, Sam Harris, a lot of things I loved about the guy, one of the things he said is you know you have culture when you don't have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Right. When you have to talk about culture, it's because you don't have it yet. Right. And I think what he's trying to do is get to that point where culture isn't something that they talk about. It just is because of the leadership that's been established and been groomed and been expected from those guys, and as they've materialized out, those guys that have come in have developed around them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not saying they're necessarily bad players, but let's just take a look at the roster. It's obvious we weren't able to get, let's say, for example, AJ McGinty now.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Injuries are an issue with some of the players. Certainly the depth of the squad has been hurt by injuries. But it's almost entirely MLL, right? That this group in the PNC, outside of Bisog, who's was still at St. Mary's last time he played, and Pifoletti, who has been kind of a off-the-bench guy for Ceres in a premiership, this is an entirely MLR squad playing against a Japan side that, despite its youth, this is a Japan side that is expected to continue and play against top-level talented teams. They played a very difficult summer while most of the MLR guys who were on the roster were playing in MLR. Outside of the two international matches in that brief window, these guys haven't had a lot of time together. Japan has been playing since the end of May
together. Right. And it shows.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It shows. And I want to go back to that point that I was talking about earlier, where I believe your point is playing out. And that was Ruxby. That's one of the areas in which Japan plays a fast style game. And for those folks who are not familiar with Eddie Jones had made, you know, it really turned Japan around. Then he'd been in Australia.
First go around there.
Yep. The first go around there. This is his second stint. And I believe his wife is Japanese too. So he's not unfamiliar with the Japanese culture and really understands and loves that country, loves that organization. But, you know, anybody that knows Eddie Jones knows that he expects fit players, you know, and one thing you cannot do in an Eddie Jones team is be unfit. He will let you know where you stand if you're not match fit. And so we saw, it was an interesting stat that I was able to pick up. When we look at ruck speed, you want your ruck speed to be under 3 seconds, right? So from the time that ball goes to ground, from the time that scrum half picks that ball up and starts to play that ball out. From 0 to 3 seconds, 65% of Japan's ball out of the ruck was 0 to 3 seconds. 63%. U.S., by contrast, was at 50%. Then you go to the next level, 3 to 6 seconds, Japan was 24%. So you're looking at 87% of their ball was under, you know, somewhere between 0 and 6 seconds, right?
It helps to have one of the quickest guys probably in the world at scrum half, at Fujiwara.
Yeah.
At getting in and out of the rucks. But you just saw how quickly they set rucks.
Right.
Guy goes down, one guy, two guys, that's it, ball's out.
Yeah, and that's the other place fitness comes in, right? Is your forwards are there to support one another, either ball in hand or ruck support, so you don't have to try to drive your opposition off a ball or try to drive them establish.
They laid hands all over our rucks. They're two locks. Yeah. They spent a lot of time on top of rucks.
And that's one thing I don't understand. I haven't seen a lot of this lately. Maybe you can help me out, but I've seen a lot of guys who kind of languish or linger or roll away. I don't see too many scrum halves purposely sending that ball their way to draw in the penalty. Now, I don't know whether international referees are getting wise to that and not letting something like that monkey business being get away with by scrum house. But I know like the All Blacks and TJ and Perenara used to do it quite a bit. I just didn't see as much of that. I thought it would have thought that would have been a tactic used.
I wonder if this year that's something that's been a focus, because I haven't seen it in much of the international competition at all this year. So that could be one of the things that, but it's speeding up the game. And I you know, the new laws, several of them are very specifically aimed at speeding up the game. We saw several of them come into play in this game. There were several times where, we had the close to gain of 50-22. Now, we've had that for a few years, but also the you have to retreat. That created more space. And then there was quick taps. A lot of quick taps because short-arm penalties, you can't set up a scrum anymore. And I think Japan probably would go to scrum in most of those situations, and they couldn't.
Right. So talking about, speed, how about their back three?
Oh my God.
I mean, you had, let's see, Riley had a try.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you add in Riley, who's playing outside center. Yeah.
Right. And he's not in the back three. He's a center. He's a 13, but who was the kid at 14 that really played well against Canada?
Nakamura.
Yeah. I thought he had a nice game as well.
And Yamasawa, I mean, is a quality international 15.
Yeah.
And every single one of their guys has a boot. So the other thing is kicking has become more and more important in the international game, and even in the club game for that matter. And you could just tell the difference in from hand kicking skill between the two teams. And it was a huge difference maker for them. They were able to keep pressure on our side of the pitch through their kicking. Yeah. Whereas I don't think we did that quite as well.
No, although let's turn it over to Cardi. I thought Cardi did well with his boot, putting it into the corners, putting it in touch, kind of trying to pin them back and putting pressure on Japan. But you're right. I thought Japan is equally able to put that ball back in play and return the favor. What about that tactical kicking piece? Chip and Chase, the up and unders and the kick chase. How did the two teams compare in your mind as a recovering back?
I thought Ruben de Haas did a reasonable job with his kicking from the back of rocks. His box kicks were pretty good. I thought our kick chase was much better than it has been in the past.
I agree.
Augsburger and Mooneyham are both, very fast and quick, and I thought both of them hit well.
Mm-hmm.
I think, when we were putting pressure on them, we played quite well. I think the concern was we weren't able to get the ball enough to do that. And so that's going to be the biggest concern, especially going into the next match, which we'll talk here in a little bit about.
Yeah.
But we need to keep the ball in hand more often, because defensively, I think, Japan knew exactly how to attack us.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we were able to respond until maybe halfway through the second half. And that was maybe the biggest game changer. And we looked at the stats. It was crazy. I mean, you were telling me that they doubled us in passes almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Passes 174 to 94. I mean, that's 80 more passes. And it wasn't like, I think possession, I'd have to look back. If I'm not mistaken, possession was 51 to Japan, 49 to us.
Reverse. It was 51 us, 49% them.
Yep. And territory was 53 us, 47 Japan. So it's not like they had, a huge amount of a ball or territory to be able to, be able to make those passes.
It was what they did when they had the ball.
Right.
and
offload.
They did it, especially in the and first often game. They had the ball in hand on our side of the field versus us trying to play out of the back. And I actually thought we did a reasonable job of playing at least in our first third. We didn't have too much of playing out of our 22
quality exits.
So, but we did a great job with our exits. And Cardi's boot, the last two matches is the best I've ever seen him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know where this has come from because I don't, maybe it was just a confidence thing.
He was like that for the Hounds. I watched him do it all season. That's why I think for a lot of fans that sat in the stands throughout the MLR season and watched him sit on the bench or come from the 15 position for most of the season were miffed as to why, because he can't control a game with his boot. And he has he plays for the ball from hand very well. He's just not the attacking threat that I think some people would like to see, but he controls the game well with his boot. So
no, I thought he was very good. And then from the tee.
Yeah, and he made one error that was critical, and that was that delivery from Ruben that he knocked on, yes. and they ended up scoring from that possession. But other than that, I thought his game was.
Pretty I thought solid. That was a yeah. half and half. I think the pass could have
a little
been
low. Higher. Yeah, a little low delivery could have been.
He's still got to make that. I mean, that's. You're going to get those passes. You still got to make that play, especially in your inside your five.
Yeah.
You've got to make that play.
I got to ask you again, I always play forward. So either just by understanding the game or, just where my attention and focus goes as I watch a game like this, I just pay a lot more attention to forward play. Thank you, John Cullen. Chapeau, my man. But nevertheless, so I gotta rely upon guys like Rick who are recovering backs. What I noticed in the first half, and I was wondering what you saw, am I on par, off par? But I just thought that Japan covered us very well and matched up against us very well in defense. On the other hand, in the first half, I saw a lot of times where we either looked out of position or we didn't mark up well enough in phase play to be able to cover that ball out wide. I really think they exposed us in the first half.
They exposed us hugely out wide. And I don't know that I've seen anybody write about this yet, is that there were about five or six times where they made about 40 to 50 meters because they had a 3-on-1 against Connor or Nate on the outside and Mitch coming up late. And I thought they could have taken more advantage. If they had kicked it, we've been real trouble.
Yeah.
I put it down to fitness. I just think their fitness was so much better than ours. There were several times where I was watching some of our forwards getting back into the defensive rotation a little late. Okay. And then that squeezed everything in. Right. And they flung it out wide. And they not only flung it out wide, they didn't just immediately go out wide. They'd have several inside runs, and they would get one pass off of that first arrow, that first pack to the next one. And then it was a quick ball out to the center. And then it was a skip pass to either a fullback coming into the line or the winger. And then they were off to the races. And you were like, why is our wing playing at inside center? Like, what has happened defensively? Right. And I put it down to fitness. I don't think, even if they had been able to mark up, they would have gotten there in time. It looked like the winger was squeezing in because the numbers weren't there.
Yeah. Now what was interesting, I thought we recovered fairly well given the breaks that were made in those wide channels. I really thought our defense, manning up after phase play was not horrible. I thought it was pretty good. I think where our defense let us down is in broken play. There were a couple of those big runs out of the back by their 15 that kind of exposed us. I think he had one real big one that turned into a try that was, from over halfway.
Right. Riley had one as well. The outside center had a big run where he just juked like four guys and went for a 50-meter try. There's clearly –
And that paper, came down to mismatches because one of them, I mean, he's you have Riley who's a 13, and the second tackler was Jama, maybe.
Yeah.
And he was just able to wrong foot him because, I mean, let's face it, you know, in eight and against a
Connor came across and, you know, maybe not his best effort on the tackle attempt, but Riley's big boy.
Yeah.
And then he just stepped on
Wilson.
Yeah. And that was it. You know, I really like Wilson as a player. He's not the kind of fullback who's going to give you huge advantage through kicking in the counter game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in those situations, you know, maybe pull Cardi back to help out. He can counterattack, but I felt like our counterattack just never evolved during that match.
It's tough against a team that has the pace like Japan, though.
Yeah, and part of it, I think, was that Japan just never really kicked back to us very often. They either kicked it out or they ran the ball,
yeah.
and that was their game plan, really. And it worked well. I mean,
yeah.
The one thing that I will have to tip my hat to Eddie Jones is, you know, I think they probably – had they played a perfect match, you know, beat us by a bit more – I think the 22.5 line probably is not terribly off from what it could have been. And I thought we actually, as a team, despite some of my negatives, and I'll quickly go through them. So kickoffs were an adventure. Lineouts, I thought, were not good. The mall was mostly ineffective for me. I didn't really see much set piece effective offense. So the set piece, even when it was good, I didn't see anything effective in the offense off of it. Nothing creative. It seemed kind of our generic offense, and maybe that there's a reason behind that. Trying to keep it simple for these players who have not been together for very long is probable. I thought the fitness was terrible. We still need a couple of locks. Kicking from it when you're now, nothing against Helu and Dam, but I'd prefer them on the back row,
mm-hmm.
the plain lock. That's just me. And kicking from hand, I thought, was mostly poor outside of Cardi. He had several good kicks. And then we didn't take advantage of Japan's penalties as much as we should have.
Right.
Yeah. So those were my negatives. I thought overall, despite those negatives, the positives were good.
Yeah.
And I honestly thought we stayed within striking distance for most of the match. And we were right there. I think it was like a 10-point game, 34-24, and we mm-hmm. had the ball, right? Mm-hmm. And so you got an opportunity. We get a penalty. We get a try. We're a score from tying the game or winning it. So kind of, you know, we lost some momentum there, and I would say about the 50 to 60-minute, maybe a little bit past 60-minute range. But overall, I thought we played quite well. Like, especially for a team, my expectation was not that high
right.
coming in. I thought beating Canada would probably happen, and then the struggle would be, you know, are we going to get demolished by Japan? Are we going to get demolished by Fiji, which was likely to be the next team, which it will be. But I have more hope against mm-hmm. Fiji than I thought I'd have going into the PNC.
Yeah, well, and I think you hit a really good mark there. A couple of good takeaways for me is like I said, I thought we kept it pretty close. I mean, at three points in the match, we were within 7 points of yeah. Japan, and I think that's a huge takeaway. So going back to some kind of points that you made and a point that you touched upon regarding Scott Lawrence. I mean, for me, you know, they didn't let that, you know, a 10-0 match, you know, within the first 4 or 5 minutes get out of hand. They kind of yes. clawed their way back into the match and kept their cool. I think that's a huge positive for this team.
Really huge.
You know, right. Cause there's times in the past where our USA teams have really gotten behind the eight ball and they've let things get out of hand. And then
look at the caps we put in there. We only have like two guys with more than 30 caps.
Yeah.
So you got young international players keeping right. their cool and playing well against a team right. that is playing well against top 10, against tier one nations.
Right. And then on the back end of that, one of the good takeaways is, again, you know, that match could have gotten out of control late in the game where we kind of try to throw it around a little bit more and try to make something out of nothing, just try to claw our way back instead of staying cool and just, you know, trying to work for points and not getting away from our game.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the dangers. You get away from your game instead of staying within yourself and be locked into what you want to achieve as a team. And I think that was a feather in cap for these boys. So I have hope. You mentioned Fiji. Let's talk about that match coming up. Just real quick, I wanted to point out to everybody that Fiji in the last pool play match beat Tonga 50-19. At one point, that match was actually tied up, if I'm not mistaken, just about 36, 38 minutes into the match. It was a tie match, I think, at 19-19. So, you know, Tonga was playing them pretty tight. And then, you know, Fiji does what Fiji does, right? And they kind of open things up.
So I was trying to find the last time that we played Fiji. I know it must have been PNC several years back. And they've won the PNC multiple times in recent years.
Yeah.
So they're certainly not – I mean, let's not just go, okay, we're okay against Japan, but Fiji's not going to beat Japan. No, no, no. This is a good Fiji squad. And despite the scores they had against Tonga and Samoa – well, mostly, I guess, Samoa. But I think Fiji is still going to be a huge challenge for this team. And the weird part, and maybe the best part, is that it's a completely different style of match. It's going to be completely different.
Yeah.
The only thing that will be the same will be the speed of play. They're also going to play very fast. The difference is just how they do it. In the U.S., you know, we just – hopefully the fitness is there. I will say the U.S. played the last 2 weeks. Japan had a bye week. So maybe tired legs versus Japan having a little bit fresher legs. Fiji will be on the same time schedule as the U.S., basically. So maybe that helps us a little bit. But I think, you know, what Scott Lawrence needs to do is just stay consistent with the boys and hope that they'll stay consistent and, you know, don't make a bunch of changes at this point. Let's finish this PNC and let's make sure that we get minutes to guys though, too. Like we need to use the bench, even if it's close. Like winning this match is not as important as getting experience for some of these younger MLR players at this level of rugby.
Yeah, agreed. What's interesting, I'm sorry, I'm taking my attention away here. It is going to be in, it is going to be in Prince Chichibu Memorial Rugby Stadium in Fiji. So, you know, hopefully the boys can
Get your studs out.
Yeah.
Get the big studs out. Cause those fields can be a mess sometimes.
Yeah. And hopefully they can get, you know, get their time change under themselves in preparation for this match. I agree with you. This is a great match. If you're trying, if your goal is to give these young guys experience with a different style of play.
Yep.
And you're not hyper-focused. You want to win. Of course you want to win. That's obvious. But you know, there's also some benefits and some wins you can take away from this match and some learnings that are, you know, critically important. I think one of the things that needs to be shored up is the defense and loose play, because that's where the Fijians are absolutely, you know, off the charts. They scored a try against Tonga where the ball is just kind of thrown behind, you know, up and behind the back, this big loping pass, but it finds the hand. and a try is scored.
They're going to score a lot of points. I mean,
they will. And I don't. I mean, Tonga doesn't impress me. You know, like they used to 20 or 30 years ago. They really don't impress me. I mean, at one point in the Fiji match, there was a big Gary Owen, a big kick up high. You expect a chase to put pressure on, and you expect the fullback or one of the back three to field the kick and call a mark or, you know, play it, you know, return the volley. he almost fell asleep. The ball hits the deck and bounces up. And as a matter of fact, it may have been caught from the air. I can't remember, but, and Fiji scores straight away from that one. So, you know, I think if the boys play within themselves, they play well, they play smart, this can be a very good game and one that we have the potential to win, but we're going to have to play a very, very solid game.
Yeah, they will destroy us with our own mistakes. And
yes,
we cannot make, you know, stupid mistakes, silly mistakes. We've got to play clean rugby as much as we possibly can. And then, you know, things like kickoffs. Japan didn't right. score directly off those kickoffs that we flubbed. Fiji will.
Right.
Fiji will right. score immediately right. off of those flubs, as right. we saw against Tonga and Samoa. So those areas of the game need to be cleaned up. And I think it, you know, this tournament needs to be, you know, on the regular schedule. I know, like, it's been a few years, I guess, that they took off mm-hmm. For COVID and then financial reasons. But this is a great opportunity, especially to blood some of the younger guys. And, you know, like we're saying, get them playing to get some different style rugby, because you're not going to get this in MLR.
No. No. And I agree with you 100%. Before we take the scoreline, just I'd like to just pick up on that a little bit, and that this tournament needs to happen every year, you know, even in a World Cup year. Yeah. You know, this is a great World Cup buildup. You get three or four matches on the hoof and you really see what your medal is made of, and you get some new players, you get them caps, and that's the most critical piece. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Travel,
yeah. It's not just about playing the match. It's about experiencing the whole process, being in camp together. And I think that's critically important. You know, I mean, we know that the All Blacks, we know that the Springboks, we know that England and, you know, that the Six Nations, those teams get 14, 15, 16 games a year. And we haven't really done that.
We're getting two or three on average right. without the PNC, right. and then add PNC and you're at seven. I mean, that's right. still not enough.
Right. And then we get, you know, the fall internationals. If we get two or three of those fall internationals, we can add to it a little bit. But this is the kind of stuff we need for sure. So let's talk scoreline. What are you expecting?
You know, I think Fiji for a win, but I think it's going to be close. I'm going to go, and maybe this is my pessimism kicking in. I'm going to go Fiji by 12. Okay. I will go, I don't know, 42-30. I think it's going to be high scoring.
It's going to be high scoring game, yeah.
Yeah, much higher than Japan against us.
Okay. Well, you talked me off a ledge. I was going to go a little higher than that. I was going to go 23. But, you know, then again, thinking about, I mean, well, Japan's what, 14th in the world yeah. rugby rankings. I don't know where Fiji is offhand.
Fiji's probably 12 or 13. They're right in the same,
yeah.
in that same group of not yeah. quite tier one, but top level tier two talent.
I'm going to go 20.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 20. I'm going to go a little higher. I just think that, you know, like going back to what you said, Fiji has the ability to really punish you
yeah.
With pressure. And it's almost like they're very, the way they play as a whole is like when you're facing one of those big boys running down the pitch with a full head of steam, they're damn hard to stop when they've got yeah. the momentum going. And I think that's going to be the,
I'm crossing my fingers on a lot of cleanup from this match, and then the yeah. fact that they won't have an extra week of rest like Japan had coming right. in against us, and maybe they won't play as fast as Japan was able to.
Yeah. So yeah, so I guess I'm a bit of a pessimist. I want to see him play well. I want to see him, you know, give Fiji a match.
Well, remember the line for this game was 22.5,
right?
And we only lost by 17, and really, it should have been 14 or 10, but yeah. Japan scored kind of late.
Yeah.
Kind of, and then a penalty kick late that they probably didn't need to kick. So I think it was actually closer than that 17.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So
we're there. I think it's we've got to stay in the match like we did here against Japan.
Well, it's a slow boiling process, right? I mean, I think that's the thing. We've got to give Scott Lawrence time. We can't expect these results to happen overnight, you know.
I assume most of us are awaiting the arrival of some of these Anthem players, right? I mean, there's several of those players who are about ready to, they've been in the player pool. I'm ready to see them play. Yeah. Let's get them capped.
Right. It's going to take some time, though. It's going to take some time. We got to show some patience as a rugby community.
We really have to be. Let's put that as the key to all of this, right? We've got until 2031 to put together a very competitive side. It's all about patience.
Right. Exactly. And I think, you know, again, I still, Scott is 100% got my support. I think he's doing a heck of a job. He's taking it the right direction. He has the right vision. So things are looking up as long as we are willing to trust the process. So
what is this? 76ers?
Yeah. Trust the process. So at any rate, this is the Rugby Rant. It's episode 185, Rick. Oof. 185. And Rick has probably been on 100 of them. But he's always welcome. And his insight, his thoughts, his opinions are important. And while we're talking about opinions, Rick is one of our esteemed contributors, along with many, to the Rugby Rant podcast blog page. You can catch it at the Rugby Rant Pod, I believe, .com, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it the Rugby Rant? Scott created
RugbyRant.com.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry, guys. I'm off my game. The RugbyRant.com. You can check it out. It's a blog page. Scott's been his fingers are on fire. Rick has made a contribution, and I'm sure he's chomping at the bit to make a few more because he's got lots of opinions. And we have a number of people that are going to be putting some Pierce. Loban has put some thoughts on there. I've contributed. So, you know, look, folks, if you're interested, you've got a thought, you've got an opinion, like put pen to paper about rugby in the United States or North America, including Canada, let us know. Drops the line. We are looking for contributors. We are welcome. That's the point of the Rugby Rant. We want to engage fans. And one of the ways to engage fans is to allow them to come on the show, like Rick has been a mainstay on the show, and allow them to contribute, give them an opportunity to have their voice heard on the rugbyrant.com. So check us out, join us. But with that, Rick, we just we'll put this one a book to mark on 185.
Exactly.
You know, and it's done and dusted. And we're looking for you to come back on sometime. I know you have a few things that you want to talk about.
Definitely.
But I want to thank you, and thank you very much, folks, for checking us out. And we will see everybody at the next.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours.
Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.